It's a translation. The leader of the elephants, who lived in the forest of the mountain Trikut, once wandered toward the lake with his female elephants. He broke many plants, creepers, thickets, and trees, not caring for their piecing fawns. I'll read to text 30. Yadganda matra dharayo gajendra vyagradya vyala mriga sakadgaha mahoragas chapi bahyadravanti sagaura krishnaha sharabhascha maryaha. Simply by catching scent of that elephant, all the other elephants, the tigers and the other ferocious animals, such as lions, rhinoceroses, great serpents and black and white sarabhas, fled in fear. The Jamari deer also fled. Vrikavaraha mahisharaksha shalya gaupucha shala vrika markatascha anyatrakshudra harinatha shadhyash charantya bhita yad anugrahena. By the mercy of this elephant, animals like the foxes, wolves, buffaloes, bears, boars, gaupuchas, porcupines, monkeys, rabbits, the other deer, and many other animals loitered elsewhere in the forest. They were not afraid of him. A very short purport. One sentence purport. All the animals were practically controlled by this elephant. Yet although they could move without fear, because of respect, they did not stand before him. Continuing text 23. Sagharma tapta kari bhikarenu bhir brita madachutkara bhed anudrutaha girim garimna parita prakampayan nishevyamano likulair madashanaihi sharonilam pankajarenu rushitam jigran viduran madavi valekshanaha vritasvayuten trishar dhitena tat sarovarabhyasamathagamadrutam. Surrounded by the herds of elephants, including females, and followed by the young ones, Gajapati, the leader of the elephants, made Trikuta mountain tremble all around because of the weight of his body. He was perspiring, liquid dripped from his mouth, and his vision was overwhelmed by intoxication. He was being served by bumblebees who drank honey, and from a distance he could smell the dust of the lotus flowers, which was carried from the lake by the breeze. Thus surrounded by his associates, who were afflicted by thirst, he soon arrived at the bank of the lake. Vighaya tasmin amritambu nirmalam hemara vindotpala renu rushitam paponikamam nijapush karodhritam atmanam adbhisnapayan gataklamaha. The king of the elephants entered the lake, bathed thoroughly, and was relieved of his fatigue. Then, with the aid of his trunk, he drank the cold, clear, nectarian water, which was mixed with the dust of lotus flowers and water lilies, until he was fully satisfied. Sapushkureno drita shikarambhubhir nipayayan samsnapayan yatha grihi grini karenu karabhamcha durmado na chashta kricham kripanoja mayaya. Like a human being who lacks spiritual knowledge and is too attached to the members of his family, the elephant, being illusioned by the external energy of Krishna, had his wives and children bathe and drink the water. Indeed, he raised water from the lake with his trunk and sprayed it over them. He did not mind the hard labor involved in this endeavor. Tam tatra kaschin ripadeva chodito graho baliyam charane rusha grahit yadrichayevam vyasanam gato gajo yathabalam sati balo vichakrame. By the arrangement of Providence, O King, a strong crocodile was angry at the elephant and attacked the elephant's leg in the water. The elephant was certainly strong, and he tried his best to get free from this danger sent by Providence. Tathaturam yutapatim karenavo vikrishyamanam tarasabaliyasa vichukrushur dhina dhiyo pare gajha Parshnigrahastarayutam nachasakan. Day after seeing Gajendra in that grave condition, his wives felt very, very sorry and began to cry. The other elephants wanted to help Gajendra, but because of the crocodile's great strength, they could not rescue him by grasping him from behind. O king, the elephant and the crocodile fought in this way, pulling one another in and out of the water for 1,000 years. Upon seeing the fight, the demigods were very surprised. Now the final verse and purport.
Tato Gajendrasya mano bhalojasam kalena dhirgena mahan abhudvyayaha vikrishyamanasya jale vasidato viparyayo bhuta sakalam jalokashaha.
Thereafter, because of being pulled into the water and fighting for many long years, the elephant became diminished in his mental, physical, and sensual strength. The crocodile, on the contrary, being an animal of the water, increased in enthusiasm, physical strength, and sensual power. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the fighting between the elephant and the crocodile, the difference was that although the elephant was extremely powerful, he was in a foreign place in the water. During 1,000 years of fighting, he could not get any food, and under the circumstances, his bodily strength diminished, and because his bodily strength diminished, his mind also became weak, and his senses less powerful. The crocodile, however, being an animal of the water, had no difficulties. He was getting food, and was therefore getting mental strength and sensual encouragement. Thus, while the elephant became reduced in strength, the crocodile became more and more powerful. Now from this we may take the lesson that in our fights with Maya, we should not be in a position in which our strength, enthusiasm, and senses will be unable to fight vigorously. Our Krishna consciousness movement has actually declared war against the illusory energy in which all the living entities are rotting in a false understanding of civilization. The soldiers in this Krishna consciousness movement must always possess physical strength, enthusiasm, and sensual power. To keep themselves fit, they must therefore place themselves in a normal condition of life. What constitutes a normal condition will not be the same for everyone. Such an important point. What constitutes a normal condition will not be the same for everyone. And therefore, there are divisions of Varnashram, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmacharya, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. Especially in this age, Kali Yuga, it is advised that no one takes sannyas. Ashwamedham gavalambham sannyasam palapaitrikam dvarena sutotpattim kalopancha vivarjayet. Quoted from the Brahma Vivarta Purana. From this we can understand that in this age the sannyas ashram is forbidden because people are not strong. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed us an example in taking sannyas at the age of 24 years old. But even Sarabhaum Bhattacharya advised Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be extremely careful because he had taken sannyas at an early age. For preaching, we give young boys sannyas, but actually it has been experienced that they are not fit for sannyas. There is no harm, however, if one thinks that he is unfit for sannyas. If he is very much agitated sexually, he should go to the ashram where sex is allowed, under the Grihastha ashram. That one has been found to be very weak in one place does not mean that he should stop fighting the crocodile of Maya. One should take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, as we shall see Gajendra do, and at the same time, one can be a Grihastha if he is satisfied with sexual indulgence. There is no need to give up the fight. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore recommended, Stane Sthitaha Shrutigatam Tanuvan Manobihi. One may stay in whichever ashram is suitable for him. It is not essential that one take sannyas. If one is sexually agitated, he can enter the Grihastha ashram.
but one must continue fighting. For one who is not in a transcendental position to take sannyas artificially is not a very great credit. If sannyas is not suitable, one may enter the grihastha ashram and fight maya with great strength. But one should not give up the fighting and go away. Om Ajnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpaturubhyascha Kripasindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna Maharaj. I think it's a better offer if me and Maharaj swap places, considering the type of purport given. But to be asked to do this service, I'm going to try my very best. So Maharaj, with your blessings, I'll say a few words in the Sannyas Ashram in lieu of 20-25 years' time when I hopefully change cloth. Interesting purport, Srila Prabhupada. I won't go through the story because I'm sure all of you are aware of the background to the surrender of Gajapati Gajendra. What to note is that the tag of war between the crocodile and Gajendra lasted for 1,000 years. And Srila Prabhupada explains at the beginning of this chapter, number 2, that this took place in a different realm, a different planetary system, and therefore also at a different time. And therefore 1,000 years was equivalent at that point, according to the time calculation, between the tug of war between Gajendra and the elephant. What's interesting is Srila Prabhupada, he mentions in this purport how because Gajendra was in a foreign place and the crocodile in his home county, therefore the crocodile was at advantage. And in particular, fighting for 1,000 years, the elephant naturally became fatigued and as a result hungry. And therefore, three types of glaciers or effects took place. He was diminished in his physical, mental, and sensual strength. However, on the contrary, despite the crocodile also fasting and being engaged in the pursuit of war for the equivalent number of years, 1,000, he, however, had the opposite effect. And that particular word is used in Sanskrit, opposite effect. And the opposite effect was that he was actually increasing in his enthusiasm, mental, physical, and sensual power. And the verse mentions how this was because that the crocodile feeds and lives in water, and the fight took place in water. And therefore, at the very beginning or the outset, the crocodile was to win in this fight with Gajendra. Such a symbolic attitude of the war between Maya and ourselves, Srila Prabhupada takes the opportunity to elaborate in the purports. And Prabhupada used this point on how our movement is declaring war against the illusory energy. And the entire problem is that since we're engaging war with the external energy or Maya, we are from the outset just like Gajendra, because we are being positioned in a foreign place. The foreign place being this planet. Because the understanding is, as we all know, that our home county or our original place is the spiritual kingdom of God. And because we are in the material world and at worst waging war against the very person who owns the material world, therefore we are at a loss. And therefore Prabhupada explains that the only way that we can leverage and hedge off our spiritual counterpart, the energy of God, is if we surrender to Lord Shri Krishna in the very same way that Gajendra will do in the very next few verses. Srila Prabhupada, however, he mentions that although we are in the material world and we are fighting against the very energy that we are completely surrounded by, created by, and interacting with, you see, it sounds, in many words, ridiculous, how you can actually wage war in the home against a person who owns the home, using the very same energies, in a body made of the same energies, and possibly with our senses, mind, and intelligence all operating within that energy or the material energy. Therefore, it's a war which we are bound to lose. Now, I shouldn't say this, but in a betting shop, you probably won't get any stakes. Because from the very beginning, you definitely will. The probability of, using a banking term, the probability of defaulting is extremely high. And therefore, you will definitely not get any loans or any funds or any help according to your profile. Prabhupada, however, he mentions one very important point. He mentions a structure, a facility, an ability which exists in the spiritual world that if one follows through in a material world, that structure becomes like a coverture. That structure becomes like a protective armor which you can use to fight against the material energy while being in an overwhelming disadvantage. And that facility and that entire structure is known as Varnashram. Varnashram is not just an occupational duty, but Varnashram is such a structure set by Lord Shri Krishna which actually exists in the spiritual kingdom of God. A very important point, which is why that structure which is being phased from the spiritual world and repositioned in the material world is the only way for survival. Such an important point. The structure of Varnashram. And what's very amazing, as within the material world, everything is about equality. Okay? In the material world, everything is always about equality. No matter what the masculine gender do, the female can do. And no matter what the female can do, the masculine can do. But practically, this does not work. And even we'll find that when there is a mixture of values, the individuals that mix their values do not succeed. And the main reason, without getting into any philosophical understanding, is because that is against the idea of God. Very simple. The Lord Almighty manifests specific energies. Kama yati, praja srije yati, the Narayana Upanishad explains. And therefore, because the Vedas explain that Lord Krishna specifically makes very specific forms, and along with the forms, he creates the ability to act on specific levels of consciousness. Therefore, to intermix or even contaminate one's consciousness or one's natural inclination in pursuit of equality destroys one's entire existence. And that is when Maya can attack. And Prabhupada, he mentions this point very clearly, that to keep oneself fit in the material world, they must therefore place themselves in a normal condition of life. Now, when I first read that line, I was thinking, what is Prabhupada talking about? And what is the normal condition of life? The 99.9% existing outside of the temple? How much percentage are we really of normal life in this world? And I was thinking, wow, what's going to happen next? And then it all fell into place. Prabhupada explains, what is a normal condition of life? What is the normal condition of life according to Srila Prabhupada and Lord Sri Krishna? What constitutes a normal condition will not be the same for everyone. It's such an important point. A point that all of us will probably never understand. Because it is the nature of the material world to say that everybody is equal and to act in that capacity. And what's even more important is to find those verses somewhere in the scriptures that justifies that point and therefore make it a spiritual point as well. It's so important that it's so difficult to move off the material understanding, because from the very beginning of our births, we are conditioned to think in a certain way. The honors, the privileges that a person has have to be shared and received by ourselves. That's just the nature. No matter where you are, whether you're in the spiritual realm or the material realm, whether you're at work or whether you're at the home, whether you're a baby, whether you're a wife or a husband, no matter who you are, this is the nature that the conditioned soul has, because the conditioned soul is in a nature called the material world, of which is consisted of this very essence of false ego. It's very important that to the degree that we understand this sentence, to probably that degree we are further away from understanding this sentence. And therefore the only way that one can understand truly how every person is different and what constitutes a normal condition will not be the same for anyone else is when we understand Varnashram. Such an important point. Now why is that? Because in Varnashram order there are four individuals who are equally from a good family, wealthy, spiritually potent, and of good character. Sundarapi, Shushilapi, Kulinapi, Mahadana, Vidya Binana, Bhushita, Vidya Sarvasya, Bhushanam. Because these five qualities are the qualities that really every individual endeavors for in this life, no matter who we are. Even if we are spiritual, you'll find across the world that they, even then, the public judge them according to the ability for which they can maximize these 5 points and completely, even wealth. One's efforts are judged naturally according to the successes in these 5 aspects. Therefore, it's ignorance to assume that these 5 aspects do not exist. Sometimes we have to just accept that this is the point. Spiritualists are judged by the level of knowledge, by the character, maybe not beauty. But nevertheless, these 5 points are predominant everywhere. And therefore, although these 4 personalities that I'm describing may have each of these 5 qualities in totality, the values that they have in interacting with the world are completely different. And all these 4 people have been asked by Krishna to accept, honor, and appreciate the difference in diversity, despite being the same. The same in quality, i.e. the spirit soul, part and parcel of God, a human being, 2 hands, 2 legs, etc. I'll give just a few examples. Lending money. In Dharma Shastras, for a Vaishya to lend money, one has to add on interest. However, in Dharma Shastra, it explains that a Brahmin and a Kshatriya, when lending money, is not allowed to add any interest. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Bhagwan ki jai, Shri Sita Lakshmi Hanuman ki jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nithyay ki jai. And what's interesting is the reason why the values, despite being the same, but the action differs, is because the action needs to be in pursuance of the goal of the particular varna. So for a Vaishya, whose goal is artha, the advancement of economic development, therefore, interest needs to be added. And if interest is not added, then the Vaishya is unable to facilitate their varna, unable to give back to society, and most importantly, unable to manage Varnashram, because it is the Vaishyas which in fact feed the different ashrams and the different varnas because of their economic plans of development. And what's interesting, and I forgot a point to mention, that these 4 people who I'm giving an example of, in my example, all chant Hare Krishna, all chant 16 rounds, are all initiated, and all spiritually equal. A very important point to mention, okay? How the Brahman, the Shudra, Kshatriya, and Vaishya are all spiritually equal. They know the same amount of verses, they can play the same amount of Badanga skills, and they're very, very learned and very charismatic in their spiritual practices. However, in their values they differ because of the natural inclination that they have got to service the world, to contribute to society. And here we are speaking of the world, not just one's immediate family or immediate community. Because the Varnashram system has never ever focused upon one's immediate family or immediate community. Because then that gives rise to sectarianism, which at the very forefront destroys the consciousness of a person trying to be spiritual. And therefore this very beautiful verse occurs in the Smriti Shastras. Ayam nijaha paro vedi, that you are my friends, and those people, shushu. Ayam nijaha paro vedi ghananam laguchetasam. Such people are very, very narrow-minded, who think that the people who have their values, who think that the people who dress the same as them, who think that the people who worship the same God as them, and others, are nothing. Such people, Krishna says, are of very, very small mentality. Gananam lagucetasam. Udhara. One should be udhara. One should be giving, open. Udhara charitranam tu. One's character, one's charitra, should be one of universal understanding. And in such a way, only can you understand how this entire material world is the womb of Srimati Radharani, by which all living entities are connected. Vasudeva kutumbukam. Such an important practical point. Because in the very same way that we may feel that our little bubble and our community is the right level to interact with, and not others, in the very same way, others feel the same. So if we have 1 billion communities and they all think like this, where can there be unity? And therefore Lord Krishna describes this point. And especially for a devotee of Bhagavad Gita, it is this mentality that allows us to then share the knowledge of Sri Krishna with others. Otherwise, as the Dharma Shastra explain, the moment that one feels one is better than others, despite being on the path of righteousness, that mentality is what destroys one's virtues, even acts of devotional service. Therefore, going back to the original example, for the Brahman to lend money on interest, this then feeds greed, lobha. This feeds moha, illusion. And this then moves the mentality of a Brahman away from being renounced, from being spiritual, from being one who is trying to follow the first verse of the Ishavasya Upanishad, Ishavasimidam Saravam. Only take what is necessary and leave the rest for others. Simple living and high thinking, and therefore the Brahman does not add interest on while lending funds. Just a very, very small example. Now what you'll find is the difficulty with trying to work out how to follow Varnashram is because as devotees of Sri Krishna, we actually follow 3 different systems. And therefore, it's very difficult. And the 3 different systems, only one of those systems is Varnashram. And that constitutes the Vedic Marg. The Marg after that, or the path, is the Pancharatrika Marg. And then the Marg after that is the Bhagavata Marg. Now what's interesting is the values within each of these margas are extremely different. On the Bhagavata Marg, one sees all living entities as equal, even husband and wife, and the only predominant activities and culture is one which is directly and only related to the deity or to the cultivation of the holy name. And on that platform, everyone is completely equal, and you actually act with the exact same values. This is the Bhagavat Marg. And this is the position that will very directly and very quickly reawaken one's constitutional position. Because there is an urgency in the current times to do so, therefore the Goswamis of Vrindavan, and in fact Mahaprabhu himself, they prioritize the Bhagavat Marg. Because it is the Bhagavat Marg that will lead, it is by following the values and the ethics and the morals of the Bhagavat Marg, the rules and regulations of the Bhagavat Marg, in fact, even, that will lead you onto very quickly attaining one's personal goal. It's very important to note. The Bhagavat Marg allows one to attain one's personal goal. The personal goal of reviving one's constitutional position or relationship with Krishna. It's a very important point. I'll mention it again. The Bhagavad Mahārāja is predominantly there to very quickly in one's very same life, like Krishna, Prabhupada explains even in a moment, to reawaken one's personal goal. Now, for a person who is immersed in this mentality, it's very difficult to understand the Pancharatra and the Vedic Marg, and it's completely fine. However, when one advances in the Bhagavad Marg, then one can understand the, I say the word lower, not in the sense of a hierarchy, because whatever Krishna says, it's all equally potent. There is nothing better or worse. Krishna said this, this is not the good stuff. Krishna said this, this is the better stuff. Krishna's not like that. Krishna speaks according to a universal principle, which anyone at any point in the cosmic manifestation can take and apply. Therefore, it's Krishna's perspective. And again, ultimate and pure. So when one advances on the Bhagavad Marg, then they can appreciate, and as Prabhupada explains, they can come down from that platform and interact on the other margas. However, what's very important is for those individuals who are not able to completely utilize the facility of the Bhagavad Marg and immediately reattain their constitutional relationship with Krishna and the realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they should then observe the lower margas. Most importantly, if they are interacting with the external energy. Very important point. Whereas the Bhagavad Marg is easier to practice in a monastery or the temple, the other margas are required to function outside. A very, very simple example is between the mechanics of one's home, the husband and the wife and the children. In that particular situation, there are superiors and there are juniors, and that mustn't be crossed. And therefore, when one tries to use the Bhagavad Marg to enhance and to follow directives in one's family, you fail. Because in a Bhagavad Marg, there is nothing to do with the Grihastha Ashram. In the Bhagavad Marg, there are no values and no ethics that one can use in order to practically apply in the framework of one's family. Because one has to have their feet touched. And one has to give blessings. One has to touch another person's feet and receive blessings. Whereas in a Bhagavad Marg, that does not exist. That absolutely is... That's offensive. That's offensive. But in a family, one has to give one's feet and one has to receive one's blessings. So how is that done? Only on the Vedic Marg. In the Vedic Marg, the children are requested every morning to rise and to see Lord Sri Krishna in the form of the parents. Taittiriya Upanishad explains this. And therefore, every child receives these instructions when they first start Gurukul as a brahmacharya. And therefore, the parents, on behalf of God, then bless the child to become a devotee and a follower of Sri Krishna. And therefore, that very, very famous, very, very common phrase in the Taittiriya Upanishad is Matra Devo Bhava, Pitra Devo Bhava, Acharya Devo Bhava, Atiti Devo Bhava. Bhava means to become. Bhu Bhavati, to become. It is not that the mother becomes God, okay, but is that the mother should be treated as a representation of God. The children begin to interact with God through his representations. And therefore, the father then blesses, and the mother too. And in this way, there is immediately a hierarchy. And then furthermore, in the Vedic Marg, husband and wife are bound to take vows according to ceremonial devotional rites, which they follow. And therefore, Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavatam that the samskaras are extremely important because the samskaras are those rituals and those devotional rites that initiate the different varnas and the different ashrams with their respective rules and regulations. And therefore, when the Vedic Marg is being followed, only then, in this particular example of a grihastha, can prosperity reign. Because prosperity does not reign when the husband and wife have a contamination of mixture of duties. As the Samaveda Mantra Brahmana explains, and has commentated by Shripad Gopal Bhatta Goswami, that within the home, all finances should only and foremostly go through the hands of the lady, or of the wife. Because the wife represents the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. And therefore, because wealth is feminine in quality, therefore when that wealth is in the hands of the particular gender, which is a representation of that particular energy, only then are the beginning phases of success outlined. And therefore, Vyasa himself, in the version of Ramayana, which he wrote in the Brahmananda Puran, the Adhyatma Ramayana, explains that the main problem which Ravan had was that he mistreated wealth in the form of Sita or Lakshmi. And therefore, his entire community were ruined apart from that person who surrendered to defeat of Sita or Vibhishana. And what's very interesting is that these particular vows are those vows that are taken upon the initiation rite of Vivaha. And the Vivaha Samskar is equivalent to the Fred ceremony for a male, because this particular Upanayana is wherein a child receives all of its values and structure of survival up until the time of death. And therefore the Samskara is extremely important. And for the female, the only Samskara required due to her level of purity from birth is the Vivaha Samskara. And Manu explains this in the Dharma Shastras. And for this very reason, during the Vivaha Samskara, the female becomes the lord and the master of the entire family, which includes the mother, the father, in-laws, the brother and sister-in-laws. Samaragi shvashure bhava, samaragi shvashravam bhava, nanandani bhava, adidev rishu. And therefore, only when the husband acts in its capacity, despite being a devotee of Krishna, can they prosper in the grihastha ashram. Just another very, very direct example, because this example, I believe, goes against much of the entire world, wherein the genders get a bit confused as to who really runs things at the home, and with the masculine predominating, therefore we have unhappy married lives. There are millions of other types of values. But what's very interesting, and the final point which I would like to make, hopefully in the next few minutes, is the point that Srila Prabhupada mentions about one's comfort zone. It is within one's comfort zone that one can advance and not outside. And therefore you find that within this particular story, that because the fight for 1,000 years between the crocodile and Gajendra was taking place in the water, therefore Gajendra was already at a loss. What's very interesting is within a few days' time, with the return of Lord Ram to Ayodhya, it's a key point to note how during the war, which ushered prior to the death of Ravan, when Indrajit, the son of Ravan, Meghnad, Megha, the cloud, the lord of the clouds, his name was given at birth because his father gave birth to a person who he wanted to completely destroy Indra. Therefore he gave him Meghnad. Actually, you're the lord of the clouds, not Indra. And Ravan said to his son that as soon as you conquer Indra, I will give you a new name, second initiated name, Indrajit, not Das, huh? Indrajit, okay? And he did so. However, when Indrajit saw that his chacha, his father's brother, Kumbhakarna, who used to eat so much that it was difficult to wake him, had become completely massacred and devastated by Lord Ram, Indrajit knew at that point that my death is close. Because somebody who can kill Kumbhakarna, I'm no match. Therefore, Indrajit said, I need to come outside of the battlefield and enter into my comfort zone, just like the crocodile. Enter into water, enter into my cave, and perform the Mahayagya to the demoness Nikumbila. And as soon as Indrajit came out of his foreign place into his home, comfort zone, at that point, Indrajit's power and his glory was just adding and increasing so much that even the Supreme Personality of God himself Lord Sri Ramchandra would be unable to destroy Indrajit. It's such an important point that Vyasa mentions in the Adhyatma Ramayana. I'm quoting Vyasa, not Valmiki, only because the Adhyatma Ramayana gives all the spiritual reasons to the Ramayana, whereas Maharishi Valmiki, for the very purpose of Valmiki Ramayana, did not do so. And therefore, when Indrajit was cultivating his virtues and power through the Yajna to Nikumbila, Vibhishan, he noticed the fumes. Because Indrajit, previously, when he decided to perform this Mahayagya to Nikumbila, he had to dress in a certain way. He put himself in a red dhoti, very similar to what the Brahmacharya is wearing on top, and a red top. He slathered his entire forehead with red sandalwood paste, placed some in his hair as well, and became like a red person. In that situation, Indrajit went to perform the Yajna to Nikumbila. And when Vibhishan saw the red flames from the offerings to Nikumbila, at that point Vibhishan said to Lord Ramchandra, "My dear Lord, even you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead." Now please don't kill the story by saying God can do anything, okay? Because that really doesn't help, okay? So just forget about that point for a moment, okay? Let's not kill any stories. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Ramchandra, was told by Vibhishan that you cannot kill Indrajit. You are no match for him. Absolutely not. Your entire entourage of avatars is no match for Indrajit. Because why? Lord Brahma had given Indrajit the boon that only a person who has fasted, not had any water or any food, or even slept for 12 full years, only that person is a match for Indrajit. Now Lord Ram was thinking, I wasn't going to say, oh my God, but it would have been contradictory. Oh, Lord Ramchandra ate. He slept. He drank water. Whereas Lakshmana did not. He did not sleep. He did not drink. He did not eat for over 12 years. Vibhishan said, therefore, only he is somebody who can possibly kill Indrajit. But the only way he can do that is Indrajit's halfway there. He's halfway there. You need to go and disrupt the Yajna to Nikumbila. Only then can Indrajit be matched by Lakshmana. So Hanuman, Angad, Vibhishan even, they all went to the inner caves of Sri Lanka. They found Indrajit being surrounded by Vyuhas, the Chakravyuh, the Garudavyuh, the Sarpavyuh. They were all there. These Vyuhas are, I can't explain now, but they're basically geometric positions, arrays of particular individuals with gaps and particular levels of military warfare that, number one, avoids a person coming in, and number two, crushes anything which comes beside him. And the particular shapes of the chakra, the guru, and the sarpa formulate in that particular structure for which the crush or the onslaught is done. This is explained by Vashishta in the Dhanurveda, the Upaveda, or the Yajurveda. Now getting back to the point here, as soon as Indrajit saw the view has been destroyed, he just stopped his yajna. And during the war between Indrajit and Lakshmana, the very person that lost the war against Meghanath was being utilized to destroy Indra. Such an important point. Indra was in the waters, his comfort zone. Indrajit was in the waters, his comfort zone. He was dragged out by Lakshmana. And at that point, Lakshmana then used the very same person who Meghanath had gained victory by in order to get his name Indrajit. He invoked the Indrastra. And when he invoked the weapon of Indra, the Vajra, which sends thunders, hurricanes, and so many other things throughout this entire world, he placed that Indra Ban upon his arrow and straight in the heart of Indrajit, destroying Indrajit. And in this way, we can reflect on how the very same spiritual virtues that are being used, the facilities, in order to survive outside of the waters or outside of our comfort zone, is then used once again to destroy the onslaught of Maya. And Ravan, the exact same situation. When Ravan saw that his son had been massacred, Ravan actually said to Mandodari that this person, Ram, is nothing other than Lord Narayana. Because only Narayana can kill Indrajit. And because Lakshman was the person who killed Indrajit, therefore he must be Adi Shesha. So Ravan was already in tune. Mandodari said, well, then why didn't you give up and surrender and take the shelter of Lord Ram? Ravana said, this is the problem, that I can't now because I've got so far in my material pursuits that if I were to turn away, then how can I honor the deaths of my sons, relatives, and my entire community, which Lord Rama and Lakshman has destroyed because of that wretched Vibhishan? So Ravan, he also said that I'm going to be just like, he's going to be just like the crocodile. He's going to go back into his waters. And he did the same thing. He went to his guru, Shukracharya, said to Shukracharya, my dear Shukra, how is it possible that in your presence, you know, turn the tables, how is it possible that in your presence, the Brahmin of all the demons, my entire family are being destroyed by this human, Ram and Lakshman? Shukra said, okay, come here. I'm going to teach you some very special mantras. I need you to go and create a cave down to the level of Patal. And within that cave, perform this particular yajna by which a chariot, weapons and armory will all manifest, that Ram and Lakshman and the entire entourage of celestials will be no match. Ravan said, fine. Tatastu. Ravan, he did this. He digged a cave in the center of his room, which went all the way down to Patal. And there and there, Ravana began the Mahayagya by which he was going to destroy Lord Ram. As soon as Vibhishan again saw these particular flames once again, first it was the flames of Indrajit, now the flames of Ravana himself, he said to Lord Ram, you have to destroy this ceremony. If you don't destroy this ceremony, we shall all be destroyed. And what's very interesting is Angad, who had previously had an issue with Ravan, he was the one who decided to go and obstruct the yajna of Ravan. So when Angada, by the direction of Vibhishan's wife, entered into the cave where Ravan was performing the yajna, Hanuman, he grabbed the spoon, the shruk, the shruva, the ladle, which offers ghee, and he started to beat Ravan. Hanuman, he started to beat Ravan with the spoon. And Ravan, he would not move. He was meditating, chanting his mantra, and doing his yajna. He was so completely dedicated to achieving the point, the purpose of victory. And then all the different monkeys, Angad, Nala, everybody came and they were kicking. They were sitting on his head. They climbed up Ravan, sat on top of his head, pushing him down. They were doing everything and anything to stop Ravan. Nothing was changing him. So Angad said, I'm going to do something only a monkey can do. And only later on did Dusashan do. Okay, so it's like a monkey, Markata. Angad went into the inner chambers, which humans are not allowed to go into, the inner chambers of the women. He dragged Mandodari out by the hair. Sounds familiar? He dragged Mandodari out by the hair and placed her in front of Ravan. And he began to disrobe Mandodari one by one. First the top cloth, then the kamarband, the same word which is used in English. The waist belt fell off, and then her lower garments fell off. She became naked. Mandodari began to weep. Ravana, what a wretch you are. Your wife standing in front of you, being disturbed and humiliated, and still you are so attached to victory in forming this yajna. If my son was alive, this would never have happened. When Ravana heard these words, he grabbed Angada, punched him, literally, it says, and he just, all the monkeys ran away. Ravana obviously became even more incited by anger. He left the waters, he left his home, he left the yajna, went straight out to the battlefield, and the very first person who Ravan fought was... I can't even hear, I'm suffering from a flu. Who? Hanuman! Hanuman jumped upon the chariot of Ravan, he grabbed his right fist and punched him straight into the chest. That was the first prahar, or the first hit to Ravan by Hanumanji. Ravan, he fell to his knees. He said, that feels like something from Lord Shiva. Because Hanuman is the expansion of Lord Shiva. And when Ravan fell down, Hanuman just stood in front of him, saying to him, Ravan, get up, get up. In fact, why don't you do this? Why don't you punch me on my chest? And after you punch me on my chest, if I survive, then I'm going to kill you. So Ravan, he said, okay, fine. Good idea. They had this very friendly conversation. Ravan stood up. Are you ready? Hanuman said yes. And Ravan punched the daylights out of Hanuman. Hanuman lost consciousness. He fell to the floor. He was like dead. Hanuman, somehow or another, he managed to get up. And when he rose, he manifested the Rudra Roop of Lord Shiva, about to destroy the entire universe. And Ravan knew, this punch is going to kill me. And therefore Ravan jumped on his chariot and ran away. Because he knew, this is now Lord Shiva, about to destroy me. Ravan went straight to Lord Ramchandra, and then maybe Shiva should finish very quickly. He started to use the Agniastra, Vyasa explains. Lord Ramchandra counteracted Agniastra. Then used the Devastras, counteracted Devastra. And then he said, right, now I'm going to completely massacre Lord Ramchandra by infesting his body with poison. So he fired the Rakshasa Raja Astra. And when he fired the Rakshasa Raja Astra, this Astra manifested the forms of millions and millions of serpents. Imagine the entire room being full of cobras and mighty, mighty snakes. The entire battlefield was full of so many snakes. At that point, Lord Ramchandra closed his eyes. And having closed his eyes, he thought of Soparna, the beautiful gold-winged vehicle of Lord Ram. The Soparna Astra manifested in the arms of Lord Ramchandra, and when he fired that, Garuda appeared. And as we all know, Garuda feasts upon serpents. So Garuda, he then ate every one of the serpents. Ate every one of the serpents manifested from the arrow of Ravan. Ravan was shocked that this has ever happened. What is going on? Garuda was not meant to be part of this fight. At that point, Vibhishan said to Lord Ram, look, we need to end this very, very quickly. Indra said, Lord Ramchandra is barefooted, unfair. Matadi, go and become the charioteer of Lord Ram. Lord Ram saw the chariot, circumambulated it, took the Indra Dhanush, the rainbow. The bow of Indra, the Indra Dhanush. And he saw two quivers, the Akshaya Tunirs, the quivers which are have inexhaustible arrows. And then the match was equal. Lord Ramchandra, he began to use the weapons of Indra upon Ravana. And Vibhishan said that massacre his heads. Lord Ramchandra, one by one, cut every head off. And guess how many times it came back? Shatameka. 101 times the heads came back. Lord Ram was thinking, this is worse than a ghost story. Every head came back 101 times in total. Vibhishana said that in his umbilicus, in his navel, is Amrita. You need to dry it up. Lord Ramchandra used the Analaban. And through the Analaban, he dried up the umbilicus. And thereafter, again, by the advice of Matali, he fired the Brahmastra. The Brahmastra, such a powerful weapon. At the back is Vayu, so that it can navigate. At the front is Pavaka, or Agni, plus Surya. And on the sides, the Lokpalas, the celestials of the universe. Such an arrow was fired. And Matali said, this arrow needs to pierce the chest through to the heart and go straight into the ground. Only then, the person whose navel has now been dried up for Amrita can become seized. Lord Ramchandra fired such a Brahmastra, and Ravan has done so. This weapon was so powerful that it completely pierced his body, and it actually entered into the ground, and the ground became disruptive. That was how powerful it is. And at such a point did Lord Ramchandra attain victory over Ravan. I hope you enjoyed this story. Just to explain the difference between Gajendra and the crocodile, one being home and one without. And how it's very important to use the spiritual principles outside of our comfort zone, and as Prabhupada explains, through the values of the Vaishnava system, one can lead a normal life. Thank you very, very much. Shri Prabhupada ki jai.